You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Joel Meyerowitz was the only professional photographer given unlimited access to Ground Zero after the attacks on the World Trade Center. He spent 9 months recording the destruction, recovery efforts, and cleanup of the site. And the results were published in 2006 in a book called Aftermath, World Trade Center Archive. To mark the 10th anniversary of the attacks, Fiden Press has just issued a commemorative edition. And I'm very pleased to welcome Joel Meyerowitz back to our show today. Hello.
Good morning. Great to be here.
Have you looked at these photos much since the book first came out 5 years ago?
I have, sure.
And what jumps out at you when you look at them now? The same images that grabbed your attention 5 years ago?
Actually, there are some surprises for me. I see that the images of people seem to be more important to me than the vast, awesome destruction that I photographed in the beginning. It's as if time has shown me where the real essential qualities are.
Is that why you've changed the image on the cover?
Yeah.
The image on the cover originally was of the skeleton of the World Trade Towers, and now it's a portrait of a welder.
Yeah, we felt that it was a way of showing the humanity inside the site and the people that served as long as they did and were so devoted to the task of finding human remains.
The book opens with several photographs of Lower Manhattan, including the towers, taken before September 11th. Was this the view from your apartment?
No, I had a studio on 19th Street, and it had this extraordinary open space view. And I made a series of works about looking south, the New York City landscape, and of course the towers played a role in it. And I was scheduled to have an exhibition in October of 2001 of these works, and then the towers were attacked.
Which, of course, made the exhibition either something nobody wanted to see or gave it a whole new meaning. Did you show the works anyway?
I did, and then they were shown at the Art Institute of Chicago as a memorial tribute, which was quite astonishing to see.
But weren't you mostly photographing art objects and showing them in galleries before 9/11? Did you consider yourself a photojournalist then?
No, and I don't think of this so much as photojournalism, but more as a historical archive. And at the time, I had asked Mayor Giuliani to let me take a team of six photographers, a cinematographer, and an oral historian in, sort of like the FSA, so that we could document this. But they refused to even let me go in, and I had to work around the bureaucracy, ultimately.
And why do you think they refused?
I think at the time there were such, it was so sensitive that they were fearful that the media would sensationalize the dead or would find things that they shouldn't find. So it was simpler for them to just ban photography. And that's what was the kicker for me. It made me want to do something useful.
I've got to ask the question people always ask. Where were you at the moment of the attacks?
I was on that splendid day in Chatham, Massachusetts, out on the beach photographing early in the morning. And then I got a phone call from my wife saying something terrible has happened. Quick, get to a television.
Yeah, a television. Mm-hmm. Well, it took a while to be able to get back into the city, didn't it?
Yes, they had closed the entrance and exit to the city for about 4 to 5 days. And so 5 days later, I came back. And really, on the next morning, I went down to Ground Zero and stood in the crowd with onlookers. And at that moment, feeling like I wanted to be useful and helpful, but I didn't know how, I raised my camera in the most ordinary gesture that I do all the time, just to look through it and see what I saw. And a cop punched me on my shoulder from behind and said, "Hey, buddy, no photographs. This is a crime scene." And I had this response, like, "What are you talking about? We're standing on the street. And the crime scene's in there." And I said, "Suppose I was the press." And her response was, "You wouldn't get in because no photography allowed." And I had one of those epiphany moments where I thought, that's what I can do to be helpful. I can make an archive.
It's interesting. If there was a body on the ground, you would have been allowed to photograph it. Some obviously people felt there was a certain significance here. But were there photographers? Did you see police photographers or FBI or CIA photographers?
Once in a while, I would see a FEMA photographer or a video maker come in for a day, do some work on a particular site, and leave. But there were no other photographers that I saw walking around with a camera just looking.
So you were turned down when you asked to be able to take the pictures. How did you wind up getting in there anyway?
New York chutzpah. I tried every avenue of access that I could. And then I remembered a friend of mine was the commissioner of the borough of Manhattan's Park, Adrian Benepe. And I knew Adrian since he was a kid. And his dad founded the Green Markets, and I had photographed them at the beginning. And I called Adrian and said, look, you know me, I'm a straight arrow. I want to do this as a gift for the city of New York and contribute my qualities to this. Can you help me? Who do you know in the government? And Adrian's response was, I am the government. So he got me a worker's pass and helped me to get in. But I was on my own after that.
Well, is official permission just part of the problem? Did you also have to convince the workers that you belong there?
Well, I was thrown out every day by any cop on the site who would see me until I met a group of arson and explosion squad detectives. And these guys understood that what I was doing was for the future. And as they said, listen, this is for our grandchildren, and we need this record. We'll protect you. If anybody throws you out, you come to us. And they did. They took care of me for months.
Was it also important what you wore?
Oh, sure. I was dressed like everybody else. I had hard hat, goggles, gloves, boots, mask. It works.
And you talked about the portraits that you did of many of the recovery workers. Did you get to know any of them personally?
Yeah, I did. And I'm still in communication with a number of those people. Firemen, policemen, detectives, some construction workers. In fact, there's a guy named Charlie Vitchers. Maybe you've had him on the show at some point. He was working for Bovis, and he literally ran the site. And he's a brilliant man. He had the entire workings of the site, the 50 different trades, in his head every day. He didn't need a sheet.
Do you think that the focus has changed when we think of the events now? Are we more focused on the people, the ones who are lost, the recovery workers, than we are on the buildings?
Yeah, I think it's moved in that direction. It's a human event, and the site is being rebuilt. But the human stories have certainly played a rich part of our lives.
Well, there are lots of shots of the workers combing through the debris, looking for remains or anything that might have belonged to one of the victims. For those workers, was it a priority to find every possible human remain or artifact, no matter how small?
It's what I experienced them doing. Of course, they were moving the rubble to get it out, but they were there in squadrons of them, on their hands and knees, dusting and sifting.
Like archaeologists.
Like archaeologists, but also, Lenny, there was a quality of devotion. That gesture of a kneeling person is ancient, whether you're planting seeds or burying something. And that's what I saw over and over again, and it's what sticks out in my memory when I look back over 10 years. Those pictures of men and women on their hands and knees are profound.
Well, many of them had lost loved ones in the attacks, so for them, was the recovery effort as important on that level than just the cleanup, or even more so because it was personal?
Totally personal. I mean, I knew so many fathers or sons who were looking for the father or the son.
Do you think that sometimes clashed with the official agenda, particularly Mayor Giuliani's?
I don't think so. I had a feeling that that's where the heart really was, the administration's heart was. The cleanup had to progress, but the searching for the human remains was top priority.
Because it was my sense that they wanted to get a cleanup as quickly as possible before he left office.
Yeah, well, their timetable was great. I mean, 9 months to do that much. Nobody expected that.
My guest is Joel Meyerowitz, whose book, Aftermath World Trade Center Archive, has just been reissued in a new edition by Fiden Press to commemorate the 10th anniversary of the attacks and their aftermath. And it's a huge book. It's an 11 by 14 book. Do these photographs have to be that big?
I think in order to create the visceral connection to what the site felt like, they need to be as generous as they are in this book.
You liken the shots of men raking the debris to a Millet painting, like the gleaners.
Yeah, well, you know, when you see a gesture similar to that, the gleaners or somebody harvesting, you realize that people have painted them or engraved them in, you know, in hieroglyphs throughout history, and it's a gesture that we all recognize. And to see it again and again on the site was remarkable.
We have a slideshow on our show page with images from the book, obviously not all of the images, but it'll give you a sense of what we're talking about here. And I suspect that it would have been a very different book if it was a photographer who had different concerns. You say you wanted to do some kind of a history, an archival history, but you also have an art historical bent. So that shows up here as well.
Sure. Well, I'm a photographer, you know, and I'm a street photographer. So I'm quick to observe gestures as telling gestures. What do they describe about the inner life or the relationships between people?
So do you see yourself in the tradition of Robert Frank and Helen Levitt and photographers like that?
Yeah, and even further back to Civil War photographers who documented these incredible events and tried to find a form for doing it that was both historically accurate as well as moving.
You also wrote a chronicle to go along with the photos that details the daily life on the site there. Are there other written records of the day-to-day recovery and cleanup of the site? Do you know if other people were doing something similar, or were you in a unique position here?
Well, it's hard to know who was taking notes. You know, there are a lot of people down there who were so sensitive to what was going on that they became observers. But I was there on a regular basis, and it seemed to me that I needed to hold on to the observations I made around the photographs I made so that I could offer this as a telling document about the strategies that were used down there.
Well, what was your process in documenting the site? Did you have a plan for what you wanted to photograph, or did you just walk around looking for something that grabbed you?
Well, originally I had written an 8-page proposal with a kind of FSA-like shooting script, thinking we would be many photographers. But once it was just me, I had to keep in mind the things that I wouldn't normally be interested in. Like, for instance, every day, any truck that left the site had to go through a cleaning process of being sprayed from the undercarriage and above so that no asbestos or materials would come into New York City. Now, that's invisible, but it was something that I had to take note of because it was such a strategy that was assembled on all exits and entrances to the site. So a photograph or photographs of that were absolutely necessary. And there were many things like that that were not necessarily artistic or interesting, but they were necessary for the shoot.
Were you concerned at all about breathing in some of that asbestos dust?
Absolutely. I wore a respirator all the time.
What kind of camera were you using? Was this already into the age of digital?
No. This was, digital existed, but it was so poor that I wouldn't use it. In fact, I used a wooden field camera, 4x5-inch field camera, because I wanted the photographs to be 10 feet across so that people could feel what it was that they weren't allowed in to see. It was the Forbidden City, I used to call it.
But that meant you had to carry around a lot of heavy equipment. A 4x5 camera is huge, and you have to have a sturdy tripod, and then you have to carry all of those plates.
That's right. I was carrying about 35 pounds of equipment, 14 hours a day. I had to walk 2 miles in from the West Village into the site and back at the end of the day. So my methods were really, I would check in every day to see where the action was, what they were removing or what they had discovered, and then I would go there, and then I would walk the site around and around and around until, you know, 10 miles later, I had whatever I could collect.
Yeah, schlepping around all that equipment and trying to set it up on uneven surfaces.
Yeah, and it was shaking. You know, people don't understand, but the entire site was moving all the time. There were 70 or 80 grapplers in there and huge cranes, and they were pulling the place apart. So it was always shivering and shaking and rumbling.
Well, it's kind of like a bathtub, isn't it?
Well, they called it the bathtub. When they got to the slurry wall, which contained the site, that held the river out, you know, so the bathtub was the name.
Mm-hmm. And I imagine that added to the vibrations along with everything else.
Oh, yeah, and water was leaking in all the time.
You photographed the site from every possible angle in daylight and at night. I'm assuming the recovery effort was an around-the-clock effort, but how many hours did you typically spend there?
10 to 14 hours on just about every visit.
And you describe in your chronicles being so tired at the end of the day that you felt that you couldn't walk home.
Yeah, there was one time when I was struggling to make it past City Hall, and I thought, I'm never going to get home. And some guy on a bicycle with a cart in the back pulls up alongside of me. He was ferrying workers back and forth from the site to Canal Street. And he said, get in. It was like, where did you come from? Where did this angel come from at 1 o'clock in the morning?
Well, often people talk about the sense of community that developed after the attacks. Not that New York City deserves its reputation for being a cold city, but people even became warmer and spoke to total strangers.
Oh, that time immediately afterwards, and for a month or so, there was such concern in the city. I mean, everybody was asking, are you all right? Did you lose anybody? It was so compassionate. It's sad that that part of our human community has gone back to being the way it was.
Joel Meyerowitz's book, Aftermath, World Trade Center Archive, has just been issued in a new 10th anniversary edition by Fiden Press, and many of the photographs of the pile, the ruins of the towers, are very beautiful. While you were documenting the site, were you also trying to make aesthetically pleasing photographs?
Well, it's one of those questions that has a borderline to it. I didn't make anything there beautiful. It was, in and of itself, awesome. In that way that nature, when the collapse of it, the gravity of it, throws things about, and then the sun is setting and everything is turning gold, how can you turn away from that and say, well, it's too ugly to make a picture of?
Joel, I've taken pictures on the same site that good photographers have taken pictures, and their pictures always turn out better than mine. It's a matter of how you frame the shot, the capturing the exact right moment.
Well, you know,
something
that
photographers do.
Well, being there is part of making it the right moment. The fact that I was there, I was able to witness whatever it was that was happening on the site. And so you put a frame around it, and really you move the frame until things in the frame feel substantial. For me, it's about gathering information and potential. Not first, oh, I'm going to make a nice composition, so it was beautiful. It was, in and of itself, strikingly powerful, and so one just respects it and finds the adequate frame for it.
How long did you work on the project?
I was 9 months inside. My last day was June 21st, 2002. I was there all by myself on that day. Had the entire site to myself for a whole day. Work had stopped. And then I worked for years afterwards, compiling the archive, documenting every photograph in it. There's almost 8,000 pictures in it. And so it's been ongoing for years.
And they're in color. There is that big debate among photographers about photographing something like this, where some will argue that black and white serves the subject better.
I disagree entirely. I thought, if I put it in black and white, it would keep it in the tone of the tragic. Daylight, ordinary light, is rich with meaning. And to see this in the seasons and to see in different times of day and weather, it was important that all of it, the rust of it and the blue of the sky and the red of the shrouds and the color of the smoke, all of this needed to be described the way it was.
There are images of the Cortlandt Street subway station that's open to the sky. And it's just been reopened only recently.
Yeah, I mean, to walk on those tracks and to see all the subway advertisements there. Arnold Schwarzenegger.
With a gun.
Yeah, with a gun. I mean, it was kind of shocking. And you realize that the subways in New York, many of them were just trenches that were dug and then covered over.
Now, we're talking about working on this thing over seasons. In fact, the book is divided into seasons. Yeah. There were September 11th was still a decent weather period, but within a couple of months, there was winter. How difficult was it to work on the site as when the snows fell?
It was hard. The wind off the river down inside that site was so bitter. I mean, you know, just an hour or so out, and you had to seek shelter for a while. It was tough and slippery.
And I didn't write down how many images you say you actually shot, but how many did you wind up putting into the book?
There's about 400, give or take, in the book, and there's 8,000 in the archive.
And is this new edition pretty much the exact same? The same photographs as the previous one?
Yeah, it is, except for the cover.
The title of the book is Aftermath, the World Trade Center Archive. Is there an actual archive of the attacks and the aftermath?
Yes. I have assembled this archive, and I'm hoping that its permanent home will be in the 9/11 Memorial Museum. We've been discussing this for many years, and we're supposed to meet this week to see if we can finalize our arrangements.
But right now it's in the Museum of the City of New York?
They had a 1,000-picture donation from me.
Have you continued to go to the site and photograph?
I have. This past year, Time magazine offered me an opportunity to go back and go to visit some of the very spots I made photographs in to see what it would look like. It's like a re-photographic survey. And I was there as recently as Friday, last Friday.
You said that before the attacks, you were photographing on Cape Cod, a very different kind of subject. What did you work on after the project ended?
Shortly after, I was commissioned by Adrian Benepe and Mayor Bloomberg to do the parks, the legacy body of work on the wilderness in New York City parks. And it felt to me that that was a good continuity for me. First of all, it's a public service thing, which I feel more and more committed to in my life now. In some ways, Lenny, I think I've gotten past that point of total self-involvement that most artists are involved with.
But you still have to make a living.
Yeah, but, you know, maybe I can combine the two in some way and make interesting works that are both socially useful as well as personal.
So this has pushed you into a whole new direction as a photographer?
Yeah.
From then on, the last 10 years?
Yeah. I mean, I occasionally have a commission right now from Barnes & Noble to photograph in Provence, so it's not a hardship. But I'm trying to find a new voice for this rather than look at it as a cliche.
And you'll be in conversation with my brother on September 11th to talk about this. I'll give more details in a moment. Meanwhile, we have 8,000 photographs that you took of the efforts during the nine-month period. You're going to be, and they're all going into, you hope, the Memorial Museum.
Yeah, well, I think it's the fitting place for them, and we certainly talked about it a lot.
But others can be seen at the New York University, and there's also an exhibit, isn't there, at the Edwin Hout Gallery at 745 Fifth Avenue?
That's right. That opens this Saturday.
Well, I want to thank you so much for being with us and talk about all of these.
Thank you.
Last time you were here, we talked about your photographs of New York's wilderness areas.
Yeah, so it's a full circle.
Joel Meyerowitz's book, Aftermath, World Trade Center Archive, has just been reissued in a 10th anniversary edition by Fiden Press. Thank you so much. It's always a pleasure to talk to you.
You're welcome, Larry.